Welcome to AMD Tech Talk, your source for the latest in data center innovation and insight on AMD's latest technology breakthroughs. And now here's your host, Jim Green.
Thanks for listening today. Our guest is Todd Kelling, Senior Director of Product and Solutions Marketing, including AI chip development solutions at Synopsys. Todd, thanks for joining the show.
Thank you, Jim. Happy to be here.
Great. So let's start off. Todd, Synopsys has a long history in developing some of the more fundamental IP and tools used in the silicon and design developments throughout our industry here. The chip heads out there are going to be quite familiar with Synopsys tools, but please share for the rest of us in the audience a bit about the company and how it's playing a role in driving the semiconductor market today.
Our roots are in, and we're the industry leader in electronic design automation, what's called EDA software. So we provide the software that engineers use to design and verify silicon chips. We also provide a broad portfolio of silicon-proven semiconductor IP, that is intellectual property, or you can think of it as pre-built circuits that designers can use to complement their innovation and their design. And then thirdly, we're seeing an increasing trend towards software-defined systems where the silicon is tailored to meet the performance and power requirements of a specific workload. So to enable that and service that, we have a line of system design, verification, and validation products. And so this includes tools for architectural exploration, early software development, and verification and validation of the combined hardware and software systems. So that really enables designers to squeeze every ounce of performance and power out of designs, as well as ensuring it will work correctly once they get the silicon back from fab.
Given how foundational all that is, what effect would you say has the AI era had upon your areas of expertise in the semiconductor industry?
Yeah, I agree, Jim. We see that we're now in a new era of pervasive intelligence, proliferating to all sorts of electronic devices, from the cloud to the edge, to automobiles, to PCs, smartphones. In terms of the designers doing the silicon for this, we see four driving forces. And the first is the semiconductor complexity. For example, the AMD Instinct MI300X AI accelerator was 153 billion transistors. The correlate to that is the packaging. These engines, these devices are getting so large that we have to break them into multiple die in a single package. And so there's challenges with that. There's also advantages with that, but there's additional complexity now in the packaging. There's also an incredible amount of complexity in the software. Those following AI know how the LLMs, the large language models, are growing exponentially. On the edge, we're also starting to see now domain-specific small LLMs. And then on the enterprise side, you can use the data in-house for retrieval augmented generation, or RAG, it's called, to enhance the functionality. So software has multiple fronts here and just continues to expand. Then another pressuring force are the decreasing design cycles. The AI is changing so fast that the semiconductor vendors have to speed up their design times to keep pace. And AMD is leading the way in this, along with other companies, moving from what typically would have been an 18 to 24 month chip design cycle now to every 12 months between product releases. And last but not least is power and energy efficiency. It's great that all this compute capability is growing to support AI, but with that, the power is going through the roof. For example, there was one study published earlier this year that showed the power for data centers, AI, crypto mining around the world, doubling from 2022 to 1,000 terawatts in the year 2026. And so to put that in perspective, that's as much as the country of Japan. So as an industry, we're very focused on power energy efficiency as a top priority, as well as here at Synopsys, in terms of the semiconductors and the software piece of that, to really keep that power down and do things as energy efficiently as we possibly can.
Given all the evolution that's going on here, how or has this changed how Synopsys is delivering solutions to the market?
To address these challenges, at Synopsys, we're actually using AI to build AI. So we have incorporating AI functions in our software and tools to assist designers in using our products, to help them design their products. And in the case of AI chips specifically, so let's narrow the field to that. So this would be processors or GPUs or accelerators that are used to accelerate and process AI. We really see three streams now that have to happen in parallel. So that's the silicon design. Number two is the packaging design, the multi-die chiplet design. And number three is the early software development system verification and validation. we really have to do all in parallel now to meet the design cycles for these AI chips.
Great. You broke it down well there. So let's take these one at a time. Let's first focus on the silicon design aspect. As you mentioned, AI processors and GPUs and accelerator chips, obviously becoming much more complex, just as the software does, so does the hardware, now feature hundreds of billions of transistors here. How does this affect the silicon design process? I mean, clearly it can't be, oh, well, it's 150 times longer to build a 150 billion transistor chip versus a 1 billion one. What are some of the complexities you face?
Yeah, so let me elaborate on how we're actually using AI now to help customers like AMD to build AI chips. So Synopsys has been a pioneer incorporating AI capabilities into what we call our Synopsys.ai EDA suite. And let's go deep on one example here to really explain this. And the example I like to use is what's called reinforcement learning for the design optimization. So in this case, when a customer is building silicon chips, it's not like an open source pre-trained LLM model, which is then tuned for the silicon. What we're doing, the silicon involves the customer's unique design and proprietary information. And so how we handle this is using the reinforcement learning. It actually trains on the fly throughout this design process with interaction from the user along the way to optimize the design. And so by the end, what it does, it creates what are called Pareto fronts for the physical layout of the device. And this would be like a curve across the performance and power. The designer can then choose which they want to optimize for. There might be a sweet spot they want to choose or do different SKUs for performance and power. And so this really assists the designer along the way to get the optimum chip out the door in the end. Another example is in conjunction with Microsoft, we have developed the Synopsys.ai Copilot. And so this is a copilot or a coach for the design engineer along the way to provide ideas, to save them from having to look up information in manuals, and just helps guide them along the way in that design process. And one example we can give of this is Mark Papermaster, the CTO at AMD, noted that what we call a PPA, which is power performance in area, and productivity improvements we're seeing using the Synopsys.ai tools. So we're very happy about that. In terms of the trends in the industry, this RL has been used in thousands of tape outs across the industry. So that's very proven now. We consider that being in the rearview mirror. And we think now that the next generation will be more use of Gen AI for exploring new spaces and creating variants and options as part of the design process. That's what it's good at. So we can really combine these two technologies to continue to advance things.
And I'm glad you mentioned this earlier because I always feel that the packaging aspect of the business is underrepresented. This is really critical stuff. How do you deal with the complexity that comes about with multi-die and multi-chiplet design? How do you deal with that complexity?
That's a great point. So what's happening now is these chips are getting so large that we have to break them into multiple die, or what the industry is now calling chiplets. Now, that creates challenges in how do we connect them and get them to talk to each other. And there's a new interface standard called UCIe, the Universal Chiplet Interconnect Express, that we have IP for, and the industry's really rallied around that standard. But there's still challenges in terms of the power distribution between these chips and the thermals between the chips, the signal integrity as they talk to each other. So we have a product called 3DIC that helps customers to manage those types of complexities and really integrate this so it looks and functions like one unit in the end, which is what we want. Now, I'd also like to note that AMD has been a longtime leader in this space. So FPGAs, field programmable gate arrays, were one of the first types of silicon products to encounter this issue and really take advantage of this approach, and pioneered this area in conjunction with TSMC using what's called CoWoS technology, chip on wafer on substrate technology, back in the 2011-2012 timeline with Vertex 7 FPGA. So AMD has been a longtime leader in this space and continues to be. For example, the MI300X, it uses 12 chiplets. So 8 are accelerator chiplets and then 4 are IO chiplets. And the 8 accelerator chiplets are on the TSMC N5 or 5 nanometer process. And the IO chiplets are on the TSMC N6 process. And the advantage of this now is that customers such as AMD can put the real leading edge performance critical functions on the leading edge process nodes, which are faster, they're lower power, they're smaller, but they also cost more and they're also a little harder to design. Whereas some of the less performance critical functions like the IO could be put on the what we call the N-1 or N-2 nodes, maybe some of the slower, more mature nodes. And that way they don't cost as much, a little easier to design. and then you can really optimize the system in that way. And one more angle on this I'd like to mention, Jim, is that when we have these really high performance processors and accelerators, they're going to have multiple compute units or cores within them. So for example, the MI300X has 304 compute units, and you've got to keep those fed with data. And so to do that, we like to use high bandwidth memory, or HBM. So this is very high speed, a very dense interconnect. The MI300X was the first 8-stacked HBM3 memory architecture, where you have active die 3D stacked on top of each other. And so that was really a phenomenal achievement. We really enjoyed working closely with the AMD team using our 3D IC compiler software to make that happen.
Excellent. It's always good to push the limits here. One area where we also try to even the playing field, if you will, and bring the ecosystem together is software, right? Bringing new hardware to market's great, but you really need to help get a jump start on the software. What does Synopsys do to help customers start with software design and development, et cetera, before they have silicon?
These timelines are so tight now that we've got to get started on the software early. We can't wait for the silicon to come back and then start building the software. So first of all, to help with this, we have a software development virtual environment so that in the early stages of the design, we can create a virtual model of the silicon device using our virtualizer software. The software engineers can use for early development prior to silicon and really shift left the development cycle. And this can be used for what I like to call the low-level or firmware software development that is basically that first layer of software on top of the silicon, bare metal drivers, APIs that abstract the silicon up to the OS. And then we also have our FPGA-based prototyping hardware where the silicon design is translated to FPGA and runs on hardware platforms, which are 50 to 100 times faster than using the pure software simulation. And then using our ZeBu emulation system hardware, software developers can run complex workloads and optimize for performance and power as well as functionality using those systems which mimic the chip.
Excellent. Yeah, you really need to start to parallelize some of these efforts to every extent that you can to bring solutions to market, given the crazy development cycles that you mentioned, just getting shorter and shorter here. Another part of that, how do we shorten that whole supply chain and development chain, is verification. So hardware-assisted verification, huge part of getting real high-quality silicon. Again, you want to get it right the first time if you can, but you want to make sure that you're getting stuff developed with quality right from the gate here. So AMD, a partner and a supplier, you mentioned to Synopsys here, a customer and a supplier. You want to share a couple areas where you've seen AMD has been able to help Synopsys drive some of the innovation?
That's right, Jim. So we use the high-end AMD FPGAs as the basis for our hardware-assisted verification, or HAV, both prototyping and emulation systems. It's been a long-standing relationship and collaboration since we first introduced these product lines about 20 years ago. And so we use these chips, these field programmable ASIC chips, to emulate the product. But we also work closely with AMD to design the compilers that translate that design that is in process optimally to the FPGAs in terms of how we place and route that design. So they're going to best emulate the performance of the actual design when it comes out. So let's talk a little bit more how these systems are used. So it starts with our HAPS prototyping system, and those could be one or four FPGAs, and the engineer could use that in the lab benchtop and prototype. Maybe there's some new piece of the design. Again, back to IP. It's a new piece of IP that the engineer is thinking of. And so he or she can then test that on the lab and make sure it's functioning the way they want to. And then we can also interface to outside interfaces at speed. So test it with real Ethernet or PCIe hardware to make sure that interface is functioning properly. Then for more advanced prototyping, we can put up to six of these largest 12 FPGA HAPS modules into a standard 19-inch size rack. Think of that, it's like the size of a refrigerator. It's as tall as a refrigerator, but then it's a bit narrower. And these become our ZeBu EP emulation systems that can do both the advanced prototyping as well as the full chip emulation. So one of those racks can do 1.44 billion gates per rack, and then you can string four of those racks together to be 5.8 billion gates. So that'll cover pretty much all of the mainstream designs for emulating those. But if that's still not enough, you can actually move to our highest capacity ZeBu Server 5 systems and string 32 of those together to give over 30 billion gates of total capacity. So we can really start with that IP and then scale it to these giant systems. And using the giant systems, these emulation systems, customer can run the full workloads for performance testing, for the software development and verification, testing the power, really tuning the power, and run billions of cycles of software workloads that can take hours, days, or even weeks. And that way, we can really wring out these chips before we press a button and send them off to the fab. So in addition to performance, to get these massive simulations done as quickly as possible, it's also critical that they be reliable and not go down along the way, because then you have to restart them. And that's one thing we're really happy to hear from Alex Starr, who's the corporate fellow at AMD, who was instrumental in setting up the emulation capability at AMD. He really commended us on how our high-end Server 5 systems deliver high reliability and uptime. And so this made it possible for AMD to reduce product schedule risk, particularly for these complex multi-die systems, without the risk of the system going down and then having to rerun and lose all that time, the days or weeks that may have already gone into performing that test.
Good to bring up the reliability aspect that tends to get overlooked, but when you mention the scale and the tight timelines, it makes a ton of sense. Can you give an example of some of the typical anomalies that you could find using these scalable emulation and silicon environments?
Yeah, so throughout the design process, we're running verification checks, right, as the designer's designing the product. And so we can catch most of the bugs using simulation before we get to that point. But using the prototyping and emulation and the hardware-assisted verification, what we really can do are catch corner cases or behaviors that run when you have very long cycles or functional cases that just seldom occur. So by running these long cycles, we can catch those anomalies that you might not see until otherwise you had the silicon back, and by then it's much more of a problem. These would be certain things like cache situations or cache overflow, or helping to optimize the memory model performance. And there's also second level effects, interactions between the hardware and software, verification of the external interfaces that we can find using this hardware-based environment.
Excellent. So I'm glad you mentioned it, because I do want to get into the power aspect here. Energy efficiency is a major requirement among almost any customer set you could think of here. What does Synopsys do to help customers optimize their use of power and support their broader energy efficiency goals?
This is something we definitely keep an eye on and help the customer optimize throughout the design process. It really starts with the architecture exploration, how you lay out the chip and the different elements that are used in the chip. And then we can also examine the workload characteristics to determine hotspots that can be addressed and minimized. And memory can use a lot of power too, because you have to move the memory, the data off chip and on chip. And so if we can optimize those memory accesses, that really helps. And one particular way we can address this at the emulation stage is we have the ZeBu and Power option, which offers power profiling in the context of the full design and the software workload at that pre-silicon stage. Our customers have seen 95 to 97% accuracy between the emulation and actual silicon. So it really gives the customers a good handle on the design at that stage, how to optimize and meet the power targets. And then to finish everything off, we have our Prime Power tool that offers the highest accuracy, make sure everything's functioning correctly as expected.
You really give a lot of knobs to adjust. And I guess you need it with all the complexity and designs and all the choices that the designer has to make throughout all the components that are coming together here. So let's kind of wrap it up here. What is Synopsys' metric for success for solution delivery into production? How do you measure yourself? What's a great solution look like?
Yeah, so we have various metrics that we use, like the PPA, the power performance in area, really optimizing the compile times, how fast it takes to run these things through these systems and develop everything. But if we take a step back, Jim, I think it's really about shortening development cycles for our customers and helping our customers achieve the best product quality they can get. And so that's why I was really pleased at the AMD Advancing AI event this past October, how Lisa Su said that the MI300 was the fastest ramping product in AMD history. I would really congratulate AMD on that accomplishment, and we're very happy to have played a part in that. If our customers are successful and happy, then we're successful and happy. That was just great to see that collaboration come through in that manner.
I guess it's more than just a catchphrase. Together we advance. I love it. Great example here. Todd, where can folks find out more about how to engage Synopsys and discuss solutions and some of their challenges?
Yeah. So first, just a disclaimer here that unless it was specifically mentioned a specific reference, AMD may or may not be using some of the Synopsys projects I have mentioned, or they may use some on some projects and others on other projects. But for those that are interested, for further information, you can go to synopsys.com. So that last syllable has a Y in it. It's SYS, synopsys.com. And there you can actually find more information on some of the things I pointed out. There's the video from Mark Papermaster on how they use Synopsys on the MI300 development. For those that want to go deep on the packaging, we did a joint webinar between some of the AMD technical staff on the advanced 2.5D interposer design and all those details. And then for more information on the HAPS prototyping and ZeBu pre-silicon emulation systems that are built on the AMD FPGAs, you can find those on our website as well.
Excellent. This is super cool stuff. And we'll make sure we get some links to those into some of the social media posts to make them easier to find. Like me, do I have to look up how to spell Synopsys every single time? The answer is yes, but I always get there because it's a great destination. So thanks a bunch, Todd. Really appreciate it. And thanks to our audience for listening as we talk tech. Until next time.
Thanks for joining AMD Tech Talk. Find out more about the technologies discussed today at www.amd.com.